Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the first episode of The World As We Know It, bringing news that matters to you. I'm your host, Ariel Zalesi. My guest today is Professor Anthony Gabrielli. He received his PhD in political science from the University of Nebraska. His areas of expertise are in American government with an emphasis on public law and political theory. He's taught at Boise State University as well as High Point University before coming here to little old Pierce. Thank you for coming on the show, Professor. It's a pleasure to have you.
You're very welcome. I'm excited to be here.
Me too. So let's get started. Today we're going to be discussing net neutrality and all the recent developments that are going along with that. For those of you listening that aren't familiar with the term, it's the principle that internet service providers should enable access to all content and applications regardless of the source and without favoring or blocking particular products on websites or anything like that that might charge you anything extra, or making lanes slower or faster depending on how much you pay, or favoritism. On December 14th of 2017, the Federal Communications Commission, commonly referred to as the FCC, voted to repeal the strong net neutrality rules that were preserving an open and fair competitive internet for all users. This act, under the authority of Trump's new appointed head of the FCC, Ajit Pai, is taking a lot of criticism lately. The FCC's rule will go into effect April 23rd, but USA Today reported that Washington became the first state in the country to pass its own net neutrality law Monday, in the wake of all the FCC's repeal on the popular Obama-era rules. Governor Jay Inslee, who's a Democrat, signed the bill Monday afternoon, forbidding the internet service providers from blocking or tampering with web content or changing websites for higher delivery speeds. Now, Professor, can we start with you explaining to listeners why net neutrality is detrimental to society?
Well, it's not necessarily detrimental to society, but it's a different view of how to access information, right? The aspect of everybody having equal access, it would be like saying Pierce College has to have access to the 405. So we have to have six lanes of traffic, even though it doesn't justify six lanes of traffic. So it allows the companies to be able to serve web surges on certain websites and so forth. And, you know, the free market may or may not block content. That's going to be something that we're going to have to see. Other countries have done this, and there hasn't been a lot of blockage. There's been some, so we'll have to see.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to watch for sure. How do you think the internet service providers are going to react to Washington State's overturn and invalidation of the FCC's rules?
Well, they can't really invalidate it. There's something called preemption, where the state government, if they had the rules in place before the FCC decision, then there's more of a legal standing. But doing it after the FCC, the federal rule simply outweighs the state rule.
So how would states be able to stick up for their individual rights as states concerning like their people and trying to protect the people within their state?
I think the best way to do that is to regulate the internet service providers themselves and in their licensing of the internet service provider, make it like they regulate, like they license a radio station. They would license the ISPs, and by licensing the ISPs, they would put in there that you can't limit service. And that would be one way to get around the FCC rule.
Interesting. So the FCC is already enmeshed in a variety of lawsuits related to its mutilation of the net neutrality rules from the Obama era, including an effort from 21 state attorney generals to get a court block of the FCC's move. Do you think these efforts are going to make a difference in the outcome?
They could. They very well could. The FCC rule actually may have violated some Administrative Procedure Act regulations.
Do you know which ones?
The notice and hearing components. Because what happened with the FCC rule is they received over 10 million, if my number might be slightly off here, but they received around 10 million email responses in favor of doing away with net neutrality. And there's no record of those going through any specific process. Yeah. So where did those come from?
Right.
And so there's a lot of mystery about where they're taking these comments, and a lot of their reasoning was that the based on those comments. And so that might be something that the courts would look at, that they violated the procedure. But when it comes to the act, it becomes very difficult based on the aspects of discretion.
Do you think that what these state attorney generals are doing is the right thing to do? Because clearly it has to be some type of wrongdoing if so many people are against it, right?
Well, anytime you have policy, what tends to happen is that the people that are in favor of the existing policy are quiet until the policy changes, and then they speak up. And that's kind of a fundamental problem in American politics, or any politics for that matter. You know, we could say the same about the abortion debate, not to get too sidetracked, but as an example. Prior to Roe v. Wade, nobody was arguing pro-life, right? It was only after the regulations went into place that you have the pro-life movement, that those people start standing up. And I think this is the same instance, that only after these regulations come out are the people that were in favor of net neutrality now speaking up. But it's kind of too late. You know, the rules are in place. I mean, it's never really too late, because the next FCC commissioner can always go back to net neutrality. So when it comes to policy, it's fluid.
Yeah. What do you think will be some outcomes if the FCC ends up carrying out its plan in April?
That's a tough question, right? That's a really tough question. And you know, I like to believe in the free market, and I think the free market will dictate. And I think that, because we really only have four or five ISPs, major ISPs in the United States. Yeah, you have minor ones. And I think the problem is going to be more with the minor ISPs than the major ones like Verizon or Spectrum or things like that. I'm forgetting
Comcast.
One. Comcast, yeah. The big ones. Because if the big ones start blocking content, Twitter and social media is going to blow up, and people are going to complain.
Break the internet.
They're going to break it, and they're going to complain, and they're going to cancel their service, right? And so I don't see an incentive for companies to block or, you know, block access. What's more likely going to happen is some of the less popular websites may be more difficult to access. It may take longer to access, you know, Bob's website as opposed to Amazon.
Right.
And is that a problem? I'd rather it be slower at Bob's website, because I know not many people go there, than for the server to break on Amazon.
I get that.
You know, that's just. Yeah.
What do you think of Ajit Pai, the new FCC director's strategy when it comes to the direction that the FCC is going? Do you agree with it?
Not particularly. I don't really, you know, agree that a complete free market when it comes to the airwaves is the right course of action. It's not necessarily completely bad, but there has to be some level of regulation. There has to be some ability to allow minority voices to be heard, to allow those services that are minimized to have some voice. I mean, we have a very centralized media in this country. Only 7 companies control about 95% of the news that we see and hear. And they want to consolidate that even more and make that down to 3 or 4. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing.
Right. So for those listening that don't know what Title II is, it is a part of the Communications Act of 1934, which was signed into law by President Franklin D. Roosevelt, and it is the legal foundation on which the FCC enacted in the Open Internet Order of 2015. Do you agree with Pi that we as a country don't need Title II to maintain net neutrality? Do you think we can survive with just Title I?
That's, a tough question. Title II might be a little bit on the outdated side. It might just be more focused on broadcast media, right?
Yeah.
TV and radio, where internet is more of a hybrid, if you will. On the internet, I don't have channels. I mean, I guess in a way you do. The websites are channels, but there's so many that the limitation, I don't think, of Title II really addresses that.
Okay. Do you think Washington's approach to the situation is going to be successful? Because multiple states are already trying to follow its lead.
Well, no, I don't think Washington State's going to be successful because, like I mentioned, they don't have the preemption. The courts, the law is pretty clear on this, that you know, if the federal government acts, the states can't. There's other ways to go about it. I'm not sure of how the wording on the Washington law is specifically, but like I said, if they go after the licensing in their local communities and the licensing in the state of Washington, I think they may have a better leg to stand on than basically just saying we're not going to obey what the federal government is doing. I mean, that works. I mean, it works in marijuana to an extent, but I don't think it's going to work here because the internet is interstate. It crosses states where marijuana not necessarily.
Would you agree with Ron Main, who is the executive director of the Broadband Communications Association of Washington, when he said that because the internet is an interstate service, only Congress can pass legislation that gives all consumers internet service providers that clarity and consistency needed for a free and open internet?
Yes, I would definitely agree with that. I think it's important that you know, with the ease of communication, right, we do need to have federal rules. It's difficult for companies and even individuals to be able to make decisions crossing state lines. Think of driving, right?
Right.
I don't know if you drive cross country. I've driven cross country a couple of times. It sucks going into Oregon because the speed limit in Oregon is 55. And everybody else says it's a 65 or 70.
Yeah.
And think if they didn't have signs to tell you. And that's kind of like the internet. They wouldn't have signs to tell you you're now in Oregon. So you kind of need national rules.
I get that. So what could the average listener do to save their open internet freedoms? Because obviously it's going to come down to a more local level.
I think the big thing is once these rules go into place, just monitor the websites that you visit and see if you see any difference in accessibility.
In terms of like the
speed and whether or not you're being redirected, those types of things. And if you are, then file a complaint with either the FCC or with the internet service provider, or, you know, use social media and say, hey, look, Comcast isn't letting me get on Bob's website, and I want to be on Bob's website. I don't think companies are going to do that, but until the rule goes into effect and we have this for a couple of years, we don't know. And the bigger problem may actually be charging different prices for different levels of access. And I think that's more likely what the internet service providers are going to do.
Like charge you more to get faster internet.
Well, we already have that in a way, but think of it kind of like a cable package. I know millennials don't have cable, but so you can have the basic where you get speed to, you know, the top 1,000 websites, and then the next 100,000 you have a little slower access, and then the next 100,000 even slower than that.
So it would be
and then you you can pay more. And if you pay more, then you get speed to all of them.
So more dependent on how big the company is.
Well, more dependent on how much you're willing to pay for the speed to the websites. And again, that would depend on each individual's use. For example, for me, I go on the internet for Pierce, and I do some shopping on the internet. And that's about it. And, you know, so I don't need access to Bob's website.
That's not fair to all the people that.
Well, I'm not saying that people shouldn't have the access to Bob. But I wouldn't want to have to pay extra for that. You know, I'd want to make sure that I have the access to the websites that I'm using.
Yeah.
Right? Just like the television stations that I watch or the radio stations I listen to. I want to have access to those. Well, I'm not saying don't have access to the other ones. You know, I don't care if my speed's a little bit slower because I don't use them so often.
Understandable. Would you agree that having fair competition levels for all internet service providers is important to maintain a healthy economy and society instead of monopolies or one market dominant power?
I agree, yeah. And I think that's one of the big things that maybe this actually may solve. Is that because there are certain areas you can only have certain ISPs. They actually have monopoly in that area.
Like and, geographically?
Yeah, geographically, right? And so by opening this up, right? So if let's say I have Verizon, just for example, I'm not saying anything bad about Verizon. So if I have Verizon, Verizon says, you know, you got to pay these different rates. And I can only have Verizon, that's a monopoly. And that gets into antitrust. And since they're starting to charge different rates, that opens them up to antitrust legislation, which means then they have to open up that geographic area to other internet service providers. So either they keep the access open to everyone, or they open it up to competition. What would you do if you were Verizon?
Well, the obvious. I wouldn't want any competition. But
right. So you're going to keep it open to everyone, right?
But, well, I guess we'll have to see how that one plays out.
Yeah.
How could local communities be affected?
Again, local communities, because one of the least visited websites are those of local governments. So,
really?
Yeah, people don't look at local government websites.
Journalists do.
Journalists do. And that's a good thing. But what happens, right? Journalists look at them, and then you report to the rest of the public, so that means the public doesn't look at them, right? And so that could be detrimental because that would be, you know, do you need the 6-lane highway to the city office of Woodland Hills? No, you really don't, but if you decrease it to one, could that really harm the political environment, right? That people aren't being fully engaged because they don't know the website exists or it's slow access or these other factors that can inhibit people from going to that website. And, you know, again, I'll use the cable analogy. I have cable. I'm old, so I have cable. And, you know, they have a public access cable where they show the city council meetings. Nobody watches it except dorky little old political science professors like me to see what's going on in their city. But nobody watches it, and that's a bigger problem, right, of access. I think maybe we should change that.
Well, to wrap it up, how would you, or rather, what do you think would be the most effective solution in terms of net neutrality and trying to keep a fair internet? How would you go about it if you could control it?
I want to see how this experiment plays out. I want to see whether or not big business can be trusted with this responsibility. Government does some things very, very well. Other things government doesn't do so well. Regulating communication is not something that government does very well. Okay? So I want to see if the free market will be a better service. I kind of go back to the cable explosion of the 1980s, right? Before we had three TV stations. Now we have thousands. What's better? Thousands or three?
True.
You know? And you have more choice. But again, now because you have more choice, what's happening? People are getting isolated into their own little bubbles. So really, we're not getting the same information. So maybe going back to the three might be better.
Perspective.
Just a different idea.
Hey, guys. Well, before we wrap it up for today, let's talk about our hot topics of the week. Yesterday, the Trump administration announced that they are suing California over sanctuary laws that extend protection to people living in the U.S. legally. What's your take on that, Professor?
This whole thing is nuts. I don't know what the Trump administration is thinking.
I've never heard of a state getting sued before.
Well, it happens actually quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Gotta keep on top of it. Yesterday, the Trump administration also announced the departure of economic advisor Gary Kahn. As of now, 43% of the positions in Trump's White House have been turned over to new positions. So that's a pretty high turnover rate.
It's the highest in history.
Highest in history. I really don't get it.
From what I know about Trump and what I've seen, he is very impulsive. And so it's hard. One of the big things about government is stability. And so it's very hard when your boss says one day this policy and then the next day the opposite policy. And it's hard to work for somebody like that.
Yes, it definitely would be, especially when that person's running the country. A grand jury in Fort Lauderdale formally charged the Parkland, Florida school shooter, Nicholas Cruz, on 34 counts today after the gruesome Valentine's Day shooting at Douglas High School. So we'll have to follow up on that one as the trial continues. And Nashville mayor resigns after having a hard fall from her platform, subsequently from an affair with her bodyguard that got leaked to the media. So
we keep electing the same type of people.
We're habitual people.
We elect narcissists who think they are above the law, and that's why we always see affairs in political office, because they're the same personality type.
Well, hopefully we get out of our bad habits. Well, guys, that's all the time we have for now. Thank you, Professor Anthony Gabrielli, for coming on the show today. You were honestly an amazing guest.
Thank you. I loved your
input. Very informative. You've been listening to The World as We Know It, bringing news that matters to you. This has been Ariel Zolezzi for KPC Radio. Tune in next week, Wednesday, 3 o'clock. Your girl will be here giving you all the news that you need to know. Ariel Zolezzi, signing out.